Hello, welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 742 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course, on our podcast. I'm Aidy Packham, and we always let it bounce, in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, the police were called to investigate a robbery, as normal, I lobbed Victor Gaeta in the 95th minute at Selhurst to nick a point and to break Palace hearts. In truth, it was not a great performance from the Albion, and perhaps the talk of going top of the table was a contributing factor. Today, we get a chance to bounce back to winning ways, and we welcome Ben White's improving Arsenal team, who have been buoyed by their derby win over Spurs at the weekend. In other news, the Albion women's team have progressed to the FA Cup semi-finals after beating Charlton in the quarter-finals, and they will face Arsenal for a place in the final on the 31st of October. And we also say goodbye to Kasper Ankergren, who is leaving the club to go back to Denmark after 11 years at the club as a player and then a coach. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we're delighted to welcome back a man who knows the meaning of big and bouncy. It's the Treason Show's Mark Brailsford. And we also welcome back the Argus's Brian Owen, who maybe once owned a space up. But welcome back to the show, guys. How are we all?
No, I didn't actually, as far as I remember. But thanks anyway.
I remember having a space hopper, not having one. I borrowed a friend's one, and I could never use it properly. And when you bounce on it, you hold those ridiculous rubber horns, and then you bounce on it. And I remember I just didn't know how to control it properly, and the thing came out from underneath me. So it's bounce, bounce, splat, a bony bum on pavement. And when you're six, that really hurts.
On Monday, bounce, bounce, splat.
Yes.
Yeah. But I had a go-kart and the wheel came off, if you're looking for Palace analogies.
Well, getting around on the space hopper may be the only way you can get around after the current petrol crisis. And we will speak to the Seagulls travel director, Darren Gallis, about that a little bit later on as well. But first, let's get back to Monday night. It was a bit smash and grab, guys. How do we feel about it? I mean, there was a lot of euphoria at the end of the game. I mean, did you think that that all the talk of going top of the table was a contributing factor?
Well, I think, yeah, you could see it panning out, couldn't you, from Saturday when those first two results went a certain way, and then Liverpool in the evening. I don't know if it's a contributing factor. If it might have been to Palace. You'd hope players are fully motivated anyway, which I think they would be. But I think Brighton fans, there was a little bit of trepidation about Palace, because as there always is, and they were quite up for it, weren't they, the home team?
But Mark, this was a very different Crystal Palace side to the one we faced over the last couple of seasons. There was a bit more bite about them.
Yeah, and it looks like Vieira's actually, because he prides himself on defending, doesn't he, as a midfielder as well. And he had his bite and his personality seems to have been imposed on the Palace players. And their harrying and defensive play was very strong. And I think they're going to look really solid this season. I think they're going to be all right, Palace. Sometimes I hate to say it. They look good. But it didn't look like we were going to concede, even under all that pressure. They didn't quite have that bite. Edouard wasn't quite on it. Zaha was ever up for it. But I thought, you know, for a while, we weathered that storm. And we looked like, yeah, you know, we could be all right here. The penalty undid us.
Yeah, but Brian, I mean, the main factor possibly going into the match, and when the match kicked off, was the Bissouma-shaped hole in the midfield.
Yeah, and they did miss him, didn't they? I mean, I thought they missed that sort of combative, ball-winning type presence. But Graham Potter sort of spoke a little bit differently. He thought they missed him in terms of progressing up the pitch and having other players in other areas instead of doing Bissouma's job. Like you say, it did look like 0-0 at half-time. It's worth remembering there were two halves with unexpected late goals.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we'll come to the penalty in a minute. But I mean, you said about missing Bissouma and the progression up the field. And I did actually say to Al on Monday night as well about the fact we're actually missing Adam Webster for the same reason.
I'm not so sure about that. I thought that the defence itself actually coped quite well. I mean, the thing is, Webster is one of those who can go trotting forward with the ball, and often he'll do it well, but then so can Lewis Dunk, and I don't have a problem with that. And Veltman's no donkey either. I think that the Bissouma thing, I actually think it's more along the lines that, and it was proven more we could see it a lot better in the second half when we went from three at the back to a flat back four. I mean, it's harsh on Dan Byrne that he got taken off for it, but he was the one who had to give way in order that the system changed. He put Alzate on. Now, the fact that Alzate got injured is not the point. He changed the system. He needed to bolster the midfield because Lallana and Gross were being horribly overrun and were largely ineffective. I mean, when we did defend the ball quite well, the ball retention was just abysmal, and hence Palace were coming back to us. So in the second half, which was a much more even Stevens second half, but for the problem that, and I think we'd have done quite well, but for the fact that we were chasing the game because of that penalty at the end of the second half. But as for the tactics of the first half and the application, it just wasn't there.
Now, Brian, go on.
I was just going to say the best moments when they bypassed that press. Their press was quite good, and that I'm not sure if Sanchez's pass to Welbeck was the best pass of the game, or whether Beltman's at the end. But that was at least that showed a nice bit of variety. They worked out how to go over it, and they did that more than once.
Yeah, Brian, you said that because the thing we didn't do very well maybe last season was mix that up a bit.
Yeah.
When you've got a high press team like Palace at you, going over the top just pushes them back, doesn't it? And it worked really well with Moda coming on. I know Alzate also got injured, but in a way that did us a favour because Moda then was even stronger in that midfield. I hope he starts, you know, against Arsenal because he looked great. I like him. And that helped. That we didn't do that much last season.
Oh, you could see the tactics on the first half were to invite Palace on, invite the pressure, and then hoof it over the top. I think understanding that the Palace defence itself is pretty sluggish, but it just didn't work. If you're going to do that, it's a high risk. You're playing the percentages and you have to play the right ball. For one, anything that goes towards the penalty area, the keeper's going to gobble up. So it's got to go down the sides. Now, Welbeck did have his man beaten one time. Was it a penalty? Who knows? But that happened far too rarely, and the quality of the stuff. I mean, it's one thing having a tactics being, you know, overrunning you, but then when the quality itself and the nature of the passing is not that good, then yeah, Palace, I think that they were poor insofar as they had so much possession and yet didn't know what to do with it in the final third. And I think that probably looks is a good portent for us because we were overrun and the defence for the most part held firm.
Sorry, I was just going to say Brighton were well organised. Like you say, I couldn't see them playing their way through right up until that penalty.
Okay, Mark?
Yeah, I'm just interested, actually. It's interesting hearing the dryness of the analysis, which is very good here. It's very, very forensic, actually, to use a topical phrase from Labour Party conference. But this whole thing of where you watch the game from is interesting. Now, I was right in the middle of it, in obviously with the away fans. And I'm guessing you guys were in the press box.
Yeah, right? We were.
Yeah, sorry, yeah.
One thing about that perspective difference, perhaps, is that under that cosh for that first 10, even though there's the atmosphere was incredible. For those listening who were there will know and report to their friends how incredible it was. But even through all that passion and enjoyment of it, we were going, oh, hang on, we could be in trouble here. Yeah. And this is a really try of it, which is, yes, we're watching for the press one. But, oh, God, I'll tell you what, the anxiety levels in the crowd where we were. So
Trust me, Mark, the anxiety levels were no different. it was a funny shade of brown.
But of course, that escalates, and I'm sure it did in the press box for you guys too. Now, I'd be amazed if you guys didn't jump up at the end either as well. But when that goal goes in, and as we've all seen the videos, and it is incredible.
Yes.
The limbs everywhere. I mean, the damage to my knees, you would believe.
We'll come to that because we'll save that presently.
Yeah. But coming back to that chance that Welbeck had when he was put through, it was very similar to one he had at Man United last season, where arguably that was a penalty. And I think actually, the one at Man United was more of a penalty than this one.
Nailed on, McGuire.
But last season, those sort of things were being given by VAR.
That's the Euros. That's had an effect because the referee overseer for the Euros actually imparted a different set of values to the referees in the VAR room that meant that actually let a lot go, the decision making was quicker, and the referees in the Premier League have taken on all the lessons of the Euros, and it shows now in the VAR decisions. And they've let a lot will go. Ref let loads go in that game. Yeah. And it's happened, and it will continue the rest of the season.
Given the I think that the sort of like the realization of how the Euros were refereed and how the Premier League up until last season was refereed. I mean, you're saying that it's the nature of how the Euros were refereed that's probably changed the referee's perception of whether that was a foul or not. So with a neutral hat on, if you can, or even with an Albion fan's hat on, if you can, Mark, do you prefer the style of refereeing that denied Welbeck a penalty compared to the style of refereeing that possibly might have given it?
That's a good question. I have to say, I prefer the refereeing as it is now. And the fact that we nicked it at the end, you know, evens that out, maybe.
Sure.
I know, even when you equalise that late on, you're still waiting for someone for VAR to come and ruin the fun, aren't you? But all throughout the game, I mean, you had Bet Noir. I thought he was very, very good. You just didn't like his hair. And that was Conor Gallagher.
I think it's just the hype that comes around certain players who are kind of cute and kind of neat and tidy. I thought he was a decent player. I actually thought the Palace's defensive midfield was the stronger part of it. So as much as the press, sorry, Brian, might have been talking about Gallagher and Zahar, I didn't think that they were the main linchpins. I thought that the real engine room, Palace's engine room, was one that did best for them. But I just see all that sort of pose and blonde streak and surfer dude and what have you.
Good player. Good player. I'd love to see him play for the Albion. He'd be good.
I guess so. But, you know, there is an element of flatter to deceive. I'm sure he will get better soon. But I think it's just I didn't go with the hype of him. He's a decent player, but I didn't go with the hype.
Brian?
Yeah, it's quite interesting what you said there about the calm analysis and all that, because there wasn't so much technical analysis going on with myself, because it's literally write down what happens and get it on the page. So it's not too much reflection. It's just describing each incident as it goes. But I thought, like you say, it did feel a bit hectic, a little bit almost out of control for Brighton. Not in our control, but under a lot of pressure in those first 10 minutes. But I thought they established some control quite quickly, and I never really felt after that time that they were going to concede. And that's been a little bit like the other two games away from home at Brentford and Burnley. So this performance that we're talking about is not a one-off in how they played. It's almost the norm for those three away games.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, there was a sucker punch right at the end of the first half. After we had exerted a little bit more control on the game, they didn't really... Well, Sanchez didn't really have a save to make in the first half, but it was, you know, that it was a penalty. I don't think we can argue too much about it, can we?
I think it's one of those decisions that if the referee had said no, in other words, there's not enough in it for him, I don't think VAR would have changed his mind. So when VAR does have a look at it, just to check that he hasn't made a complete boo-boo. You know, I mean, it is a shame that every single defensive player we'll try and make a case for it not being a penalty, but do you remember the Everton penalty from a few weeks ago, AD?
Yeah.
And you were saying that whoever it was, remind me who went down?
No, it wasn't Lookman.
Was it Alan? No, I was
no,
not.
We're coming back to that. Okay, but yes,
Bell barged him over from behind. He just got ahead of him. And
Coleman.
He was looking for it. Yeah. I think his penalty was exactly the same. You know, yeah, he was kind of looking for it, but in this instance, Trossard obliged him. And let's put it this way, there are no Brighton fans who are spitting over this one. Yeah, you can see it's a penalty. And let's put it this way, if it was the other way around, you'd be screaming for it.
Well, Brighton didn't have any complaints. Potter didn't have any complaints. He said it was a penalty, so did Lallana. So,
We went into the game with a certain element of confidence. You know, on the journey up there, everyone was talking about this going. If we win, we go top of the league. Rah rah rah.
Speak for yourself, mate.
But no, I wasn't. But it was like we were. As soon as the sides were announced, and the fact came out that it was Zaha's 400th appearance for Palace. It shot me like a dagger, because you know exactly what was going to happen. And he stepped up and took that spot kick, and you just knew he wasn't going to miss.
Yeah, but doesn't it say something that for a fella who has spent so long trying to get away from that club that it's his 400th game? What does that tell you?
Right, I still play. Say he plays with an expression on his face that like he's just remembered he's left the gas off. But
he just seems to be angry with his teammates the whole time. I mean, never mind. All right, let's face it. Yes, you use the phrase bête noire. This is a fella who I'm certain is asleep for the most of the rest of the season and comes alive for when he's playing the Albion. And for a Palace hero, for a Palace stalwart, he can get that. We have our hero, the person that the Palace hate. And they get it. They and fair play to him. You know, Wilfried Zaha gets it. And he scored loads of goals against us. Although I don't think he scored that any from open play against us for a long time. But that's another matter. So he gets it. That's fine. But also, when you see him playing, you saw his facial expression at the very end there. He's not a team player. You know, the accusatory look he was giving his teammates as they were walking off. This is a fella who... I'm not going to speak for him, but there is surely somewhere down the line an element of this fella is as big as Crystal Palace itself. And it should never be the case that any one player is as big as a club, Mark. I mean, it's, you know, tell us what your attitude to Zaha is. And if the boot was on the other foot, would he be a hero to you?
I think, you know, it, those types of players, I mean, you know, I'll maybe in that same bracket, the kind that wind up the opposition in some... As a player, you usually like playing for your own side. It's when Grealish comes down to the Amex, you know, we boo him, but, you know, he's a great player for England. But there are players we love to hate, and Zaha is a great panto villain. So talking from the point of view of using him as in the Treason Show, for example, we'll do gags about it. Obviously, I'm definitely going to town enjoying this in the next season. But, you know, he is the great panto villain. He really is. And Palace, over the many, many years I've been watching the Albion play Palace, I've always had one or two like that. I mean, the 70s when I first started watching the Albion, Jim Cannon.
Yes.
You know, Vic Belair was kind of like a nicer version, much nicer version of Zaha, if you like. Vic Belair was a good player. Yes. He didn't have the attitude issue that you sense Zaha might have. So Bettmar's a good one, but Panto Villain is what I'd call him. And he's a great butt of jokes in the Treason Show.
I'm sure he is. Okay, well, we went in 1-0 down at half time, and there was a change at half time, as we've all alluded out. Stephen Alzati came on for Dan Burns, give us some more solidity in that midfield that was getting overrun, and it was working for a while. I mean, there was I don't think Alzati had quite got to the temperature of the game. I mean, that slip he made, which nearly ended us in deep doo-doo, where the linesman flag came up, and it was a brilliant save from Sanchez, regardless of the flag.
Sorry, I've got to interrupt there. Now, you, I had forgotten about that particular incident, but yes, the ball came to, it was an easy pass, Alzate slipped, which you think, well, don't wear plimsolls at Parkhurst Cell, and, you know, along, and then came the player. Now, what level of dead brainery are we dealing with? Because you could see that the other striker was not getting back to support him, and the fella passed it forward to a bloke who was clearly 5 yards offside. It was one of those where the linesman didn't raise his flag until the move was over. And that's the kind of non-flaggery that drives me up the wall, because it's so clear. But on every level, it's just the same as, I don't know, a forward pass to someone who's, in rugby, you know, all right, sorry, you're 5 yards ahead of me. I'm not going to run past you to pass the ball backwards. I'm going to throw the ball. It was absolutely, thankfully, brain dead. But, you know, this is Premier League, you know, greatest league in the world, TM.
I actually said at that moment, pass it. And I think the person next to me got the wrong sort of end of the stick and thought I was like encouraging Crystal Palace to go through. You could see, you know, pass that ball.
Yeah.
And that's offside. It ruins the whole thing. But, yeah, there was one or two slightly anxious moments there. Are we coming on later to the one that wasn't offside?
So we're talking about the IU chance. So let's do that now. It was a bad miss, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, from our angle, you know, we're side onto that penalty area, aren't we, Aidy? We were looking at it. So when he hits it, you just don't know where it's going to go. You wait for the net to below or the ball to come back off the advertising hoardings, I guess from the away section. Again, you might not, could you even tell if it had gone in or not? I'm not sure because it was so close to the post.
We thought it had scored, but where we were in that far away, because we got a weird long range angle, and I was the corner, we just went, oh, they scored. And when it didn't, it was like, yeah.
believe me, the entire press box went.
I'm not suggesting that there was any sabotage of the Palace man of the match poll, but you got it.
Yes.
We're not
the only outhouses in Sussex then.
Okay, well, I mean, that's the last one. I mean, there were some chances. Dunk had a header tipped over by Gaeta.
That was very early, wasn't it? That was before all this.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, but I mean, it was, Shane Duffy had a couple of chances that were easy for the goalkeeper. But there was a challenge on Gaeta by Shane Duffy, which led him playing for time with a poorly shoulder. And that kind of shot him in the foot a little bit. In fact, it shot him so much in the foot that he couldn't take a goal kick.
And again, listening to the commentators afterwards, not one of them, I think it was it Effen Okoku who was the co-commentator? It sounded like it for the TV, and they had Glenn Murray in the studio. None of them were actually saying it was a foul, but if it hadn't been, you know, it's one of those ifs and ands. You know, if ifs and ands were pots and pans, you'd be a kitchen. If it hadn't been a free kick, he wouldn't have shanked it. Veltman wouldn't have passed it forward, and we wouldn't have had limbs. True.
But go on, Brian.
But there's all sorts, isn't there, during a game like that? There is so many things that you can pinpoint. So many of those little moments. I mean, I was telling you, you know, before we came on here, me and my colleague who was working from home watching on TV had got the pages done. We've got the headlines written, everything in place, the pictures that told the story. You know, Brighton arguing about the penalty and all this and that. And we were literally ready to press send, you know, send to press 10 PM deadline. And I looked up and there's Mopay running through. And
press help.
You know, it's one of those. If it's the other way around, if it's Benteke scoring the winner, it's just lose-lose situation. But this one was a sort of mission impossible, but let's get on with it and no problem sort of thing. But it went in. I mean, from where I was, it seemed to go in slow motion, and Waita seemed to be in the air for about 10 seconds. It was so sort of slow and agonizing, but just totally out of nothing. Just when you finally decided it wasn't going to happen, it happened.
Yeah. I mean, that's the view from the press box. Mark, tell us about the view from, what is it called, the Arthur Waite stand?
Yeah, Arthur Waite. So I'm not quite in that in the far corner, but I'm near it in that section. So I'm level with the ball as it's in the air.
Okay. Like,
it going over the head of the keeper. And you're right, Brian, it was definitely slow motion. Because you saw the ball come through and you went, no, we can't. We were saying, shall we go? No, we're kettled. We won't get out. So we're not going to score, are we? And then obviously the kick comes out from the keeper. And there's always that hope. And of course, the double bounce. And then obviously Dick Knight should write another campaign. Only the ball should bounce maybe on this one and get another T-shirt. But anyway, so... And then of course, as you said, Brian's right there. It was slow motion because it's a delicate knob. If you think of the pressure he was under at that moment as well. And of course, all of us are in suspended animation and we're almost going up. You know that feeling when you're in the crowd and you feel everybody going with you? And then, no, it won't go in. You just don't think it's going to go in. And then it goes in and I'm sure I levitated.
Levitated or detonated?
Detonated was the other word because then there was a shove. Surge of fans all the way down the Arthur Way. Several of us went tumbling over the next rows.
Yeah.
Both of us have got knee damage and bruises all over us in the most joyous celebration I can remember. Actually, not dissimilar, I suppose, when Ajoa scored away at Forest. But I mean, in that way, my voice is still sore now. Yeah, I really should have been more professional. But I went, I'm okay! And limbs is the word, and it lasted, I mean, 10 minutes of just still screaming and shouting in the air.
Go on, Mark.
Oh, it was just joy. I love doing that to Palace.
The press box reaction amongst those who are clearly sort of, you know, working for the Brighton side of things, the reaction was, yes.
How did Warren Absolute was not. He went
a purpley of shade of gammon that I could ever know. We just went, yes. I mean, actually, don't get me wrong. Warren Aspinall smiled. It was great.
Didn't he laugh? I'm sure there was a laugh in the background.
There was a big laugh.
Might have been me.
It felt like a win, didn't it, really?
The thing that's come from that now, and the thing that's come from that is, it's not the fact. I mean, the Palace fans are, don't get me wrong. We still owe them from last year because, you know, this snatched a draw. Bentancur grabbed a victory, so we still owe them. But they're getting salty over the fact of, oh, you got a draw at Selhurst. No. We can get a draw at Selhurst Park anytime. You know, we do it all the time. Don't worry about that. It was stopping your win. There you are in the middle of your, you know, we're Palace and that is why we love you. And you could hear it just stop mid-line and you just hear this, why'd you let it bounce? And the rest, as they say,
history. And didn't Neil Maupay enjoy it as well?
I love Maupay now. I mean, he had a few issues, didn't he? There was a bit of a grumpiness about him. He's a hero. That man is going to get such a reaction at the Arsenal game. I love him. I think the attitude, the fear now is going to instill in other defences. Arsenal, they're his bunnies. This is going to be hilarious watching what happens.
Brian, in that case, I mean, obviously you talk to the club, you're there at the presses and what have you.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say, I mean, he's four goals into the season. Who knows, you know, what can... Is there a, you know, from within the club, is there a different attitude from Maupay, or is there an attitude about the club regarding Maupay? Because the fine margins that Graham Potter would talk about last season, we seem to be on the other side of those margins this time. Is there something quantifiable that the club is talking about that's changed this season?
Not really him, but not really from the club as far as I know, but he said that I heard him in an interview saying that it's not all about the goals, that he's not even thinking about how many goals he's got. So I don't know if that is sort of takes a bit of the pressure off of him trying to take a bit of pressure off himself. He seemed quite surprised. Did you see, which I'm going to mention anyway, the interview on Sky, he was quite surprised when they showed him how many shots he's had. And he's not many, it's like four goals from 11.
Yeah.
And he seemed quite surprised by that. But I think it's early. It's still early, isn't it? I mean, he was going quite well this time last season. So let's see how he keeps going. But also, if other people are scoring and not, it takes a little bit of the heat off him in that respect. Two other things to mention about that. Just a quick mention for Joel Veltman's controlled side foot volley to put him through. I think it was more, that's probably didn't get as much credit as it deserved. Mm-hmm. And also the fact that he scored then gave Maupay the chance to do that. Like I referred to, the piece on Sky with Thierry Henry, which I'm just looking at a still of now. And I think that showed the Maupay that we've seen in press conferences and then on a Zoom session we did with him, where he's such a intelligent, calm, well-spoken in a foreign language, such a sort of nice bloke who's so different to the almost the rage that he sort of gets in at times on the pitch, like we saw at Wolves, or where he seems to lose his composure. And you saw, if he hadn't scored that goal, he then wouldn't have done that interview and the brilliant piece with Thierry Henry, where he's like, it's an absolute honour to meet you, or whatever it was he said.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really good, because that'll do him a lot of good PR-wise, sort of people getting to know him a little bit more nationwide, you know, because it was obviously primetime Sky post-match. And that's what he's like as well. And that's why I think sometimes those of us who talk to him in that situation are amazed by how the sort of red mist can descend at times.
Sure. Okay, well, we do need to, before we move on, we just need to quickly touch on the aftermath, which was not pretty. I mean, there are certain things going on in the tunnel, not even in the tunnel. It was like the Palace fans trying to get to Lewis Dunk and the abuse that he was getting. There was the scenes going on in the streets afterwards. I mean, at one point, I thought we were at Aintree.
Well, we walked back. I think it's the case that both sets of fans were let out at the same time, and there was a massive police presence. And I couldn't tell you the name of the street, but it's the one that you have to walk along in order to get to Norwood Junction Station. And we're walking along there very quietly, very sort of, you know, sort of heads down a little bit, and we saw these these delightful 15-year-old always ultras running towards us in a way that makes it look as though there's some action and some of their top boys are playing on the swings and roundabouts, and the horses were following down them. It really was like 1975 again. But yeah, it was getting a bit sort of noisy, a bit frisky. We ended up getting, of all things, and this is how elevated our status is, clearly, we got a personal escort from Darren Balcombe through that melee to Norwood Junction. And then we saw the Palace fans having a good old scrap with the police. They couldn't even be bothered to fight the Brighton fans. It was
not pleasant.
The thing is, when we got to the Premier League before, yes, it got a bit sort of naughty and a bit heated, and then people calmed down, and then, you know, it was. I know that we've had the lockdown and the empty stadiums and what have you, but there is something about this particular thing that the Albion have done, i.e. scoring the 138th minute or whatever it is to deny Palace their win, that has really got to their very DNA. Now, when we lost to Benteke's goal, now, admittedly, there was no one in the stadium, our attitude was, well, this is our fault. We should have buried them by the 23rd minute, and we didn't. This time, there's something intrinsically nasty about the fact that they couldn't handle the fact that we equalised. And when you then sort of bounce them into sort of being idiots, then what can you say?
Okay. Well, let's move on from there. And you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, that's 7.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. The show, as ever, is brought to you in association with the brilliant old footballshirts.com. And we, as usual, we have a lovely shirt of the week for you, which you've all got there. So who'd like to have a go at describing this one for me?
Well, I know who it is. So Mark or Brian, knock yourselves out. Yeah.
I'll describe it. It's black and white stripes.
There you go.
It is literally, there's no more to it than that. They're usually quite complex. The sponsor actually is Beko. It's made by Adidas. Has an 80s Notts County look to it, but it isn't. And the badge says BJK, so presumably a country where club is spelt with a K. The club were formed in, by the looks of it, 2 years after Brighton. And there's a star and crescent emblem as well, but it looks, apart from the badge and the sponsor, it looks like a Notts County mid-80s, but it obviously isn't.
The only thing I'd say about it being a black and white striped shirt is that I thought it might have been a Dorothy Stringer one, and that's where I went to school.
I think they're all black these days.
I tried to work it out. I thought it looked vaguely South American, where I was heading. I was wondering if it was like a, could it be
Paul? No, it's not. Can I tell you,
Besiktas.
Yes, you're right, it is. And this is the shirt of the week. This is chosen from one of the most recent shirts added to the site, which currently numbers 119,323 shirts in total. This is the 1989-1990 away shirt of Turkish Super League side Besiktas. Rather sadly, they go by the nickname the Black Eagles. But I prefer the Turkish translation, which is Kora Kastara. They play at the 42,590 capacity Vodafone Park, which is named after an ancient Ottoman imam.
Of course,
right, not a phone company.
Who, legend has it, used to travel along the byways of Istanbul by passing messages to those in need. Hashtag, this may not be true. So still. Besiktas play in the Super League, which is the highest level of football in Turkey, and they were last season's champions, having finished on the same number of points as Galatasaray. Both teams are 84 points, with the stats 126, drawn 6, lost 8. The goal difference to Galatasaray was plus 44, and for Besiktas, plus 45. Now that is a close league.
That is close, isn't
they,
it?
They won the league by one goal.
That's enough to set a riot off going, isn't it? Because they're good, easy-going people in Turkey, aren't they, when they watch their football?
They've won the league 16 times and have 25 first-team domestic cups to their name. They made the European Cup four quarterfinals in 1987 and the UEFA Cup quarterfinals twice in 2003 and 2017. The club is 118 years old and boasts a hugely successful basketball team, as well as volleyball, handball, boxing, rowing, table tennis, and beach football teams, all competing in national competitions. They even have an official bridge and chess team, which is, I can just see Mark joining in with the particular chess team, actually.
Yeah.
Yes. But there's no current links to the Albion, which is 2 weeks in a row now. We'll have to try harder next week and have a great show. So thanks for that, Phil. But we've got
where did the Coca-Cola kid end up playing then?
He's at Derby now.
Fenerbahce.
Yeah, I think it was Fenerbahce.
Yeah.
Okay, fine, fair enough.
Okay, now obviously we've all seen the queues at the petrol pumps of late, and that has been affecting a lot of people, and that includes Seagull Travel. And I spoke to Darren Gallis, the director of Seagull Travel, a little bit earlier on. Darren, welcome back to The Raw. It's great to see you, looking healthy there. How's the last 18 months been for you?
Well, thank you for having me back. Very challenging, as you would expect for any travel-related industry. The business has been a challenge, but now fans are back allowed in the ground. Demand is going through the roof. So, yeah, pleased to be back.
I mean, obviously, the last 18 months have been difficult for everyone, but for someone who specialises in getting people to events such as football matches and concerts, etc., it must have been absolutely devastating for you.
Yeah, it was. I won't deny that I had a few sleepless nights, but thankfully the way the business has been managed over the years, we've been very careful with money. And we have an excellent relationship with the coach companies. And most importantly, we have a great relationship with the supporter, ultimately our customer. So all those factors put together, we're able to get through it. And let's not forget, when we lost the 5 games in the season before last, people weighed their refund with us. So all these factors made us stronger, and now we're back. We have more challenging issues we have to deal with.
Okay, well, let's move on to that then, because anyone with eyes in their head would have noticed the great big queues coming out of all the petrol stations up and down the country of late. Panic buying, I guess, for want of a better phrase. But for the likes of yourselves who rely on fuel to keep yourselves moving, and obviously for the likes of people who work in the NHS, the fire services, etc. I mean, it's mad, isn't it?
It is, and it became started to come a real issue for us last weekend, when we saw all the queues building around our pickup locations. So when we had the free travel service for the women's matches last weekend, and obviously Crystal Palace away on Monday, we had to move pickup locations to try and avoid, obviously, main superstores like Tesco's and Sainsbury's. We had to try and stay away from those areas for fear of traffic delays. So, yes, this week I spent a lot of time liaising with the coach companies to ensure that they have enough petrol for the weekend, the Arsenal game. So thankfully, a lot of them had their own fuel supply at their depots, and it's not a big issue at the moment. But it's very challenging, very challenging.
Okay, so I mean, obviously going forward, obviously we've got Arsenal this weekend. I mean, it's still an issue. I mean, but there's talk of the fact that they're going to bring in the army to deliver the fuel to the petrol stations because there's not enough drivers. Is it anything changed? Will your pickup stops change for this weekend?
No, for this weekend, we've got far too many pickup locations to worry about. Last weekend, it was a bit easier to manage because we have fewer coaches. But we got upwards of 50 coaches this weekend. So to try and make changes this last minute, it's impossible. However, the coach stewards on each of the coaches have the ability to move pickup locations if they physically can't get to that location. So there will be a bit of fluid changes on the day, but essentially the message is all pick-up times, locations remain the same.
So basically for anyone who is using the coaches at the weekends, just to stay in contact, just in case they get a phone call or an email saying that the location has changed?
Definitely. The contact will come from the coach driver or the coach steward or from the Seagull travel team on the day. We will be doing updates on social media as well. So I encourage people to follow our Twitter, Facebook groups and subscribe now for them.
Okay. Now, obviously, Darren, there was a big game on Monday night, and you yourselves were in operation as usual, and you probably helped a few people avoid some of the issues that may or may not have happened afterwards. I mean, how did you bounce back from all of that on Monday?
Well, during the game, I was thinking there's no way we're going to get away from here without getting all the grief from the Palace fans for beating us, because we really didn't look like getting anything out of the game. So the last minute goal was just absolutely amazing. And that completely changed the atmosphere, which meant that our coaches were slightly delayed getting away from the ground, but everyone was happy with that. So yeah, it was all good, all good.
It does make a big difference, doesn't it? I mean, I've been on the coaches when coming back from some far-flung place in the north after a defeat in League One or something. It's just horrible, but it did feel like a bit like a win, didn't it?
Oh, most definitely. And we only had three coaches go there the other night, and the M23 was closed on the way back home. So people had a bit of a nightmare getting back as well, but had we lost, it would have been really bad, but it was bearable.
You see, it was shut in protest at people calling the M23 derby. That's all it was.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they can stop that.
Well, I mean, we've been we may have mentioned it once or twice on air and on our socials that exactly what this game is, and we're talking about it obviously in the main show, but the Palace fans really they were buoyant for a long time. It was getting quite feisty. I mean, where we were up in the press box, it was in at the back of the main stand. It was getting quite feisty up there.
Yeah, it always does. And I think when you look at the games we played with them last season, it's complete role reversal. We dominated play last year and got nothing from the game. This year, to be honest, this season we were lucky to get a point. But it just consolidates our great start to the season. So, it's all good.
Okay, and what's next going forward for you? Obviously, you're dealing with the fuel crisis at the moment. We've got the women's games which are operating, and obviously we've got Norwich coming up, Liverpool coming up.
Yeah, all busy, and we're very mindful and planning already for the Boxing Day fixture, because that's always our service is always in demand for that game as well. So we're planning for months in ahead at the moment. Obviously, we've got Leicester. We've just launched as well for the Carabao Cup. So there's a lot going on. Demand's going through the roof because of the removal of the parking facility at Bennett's Field. So we're dealing with that. At the same time, I'm asking more vehicles of the coach companies, but they haven't got the coach drivers to drive the vehicles. So at the moment, it's very hard to manage the demand with the supply vehicles.
Okay, we've seen obviously the games we've had at the Amex already. When they announce the attendances, it's tickets sold rather than bums on seats, isn't it? But and we have seen more empty seats than we would have done. I mean, how's that been with the coaches? Because people's confidence is returning, but has it affected you at all?
I'm certainly getting more emails from people saying they can't attend, and that's definitely more than previous seasons. And most of the excuses are, they've either got COVID or they're in isolation or whatever. So yes, there's probably 10%, so four or five per coach that probably not attending, which when you look at the empty seats at the Amex, that's probably a good correlation. So, yeah, obviously people that book the away seats, no, they're diehards and they'll go whatever, but obviously COVID's an issue for them as well. So we do see the occasional dropout there as well.
Okay. And just before we finish, I mean, obviously, I mean, we didn't go top of the league on Monday, but there's a possibility we could do it on Saturday if results go our favour. How would you celebrate?
I think I'll be dancing around the coach park with a wig.
fully clothed, I hope.
Fully clothed. Yeah, definitely fully clothed.
No mankinis to be seen around here, though.
Yeah. I've just got one final comment to make. Why did he let it bounce?
And why? And that's, I will leave it there. Thanks, Darren. And good luck with everything. And where can we contact you if people need to?
So on our website, seagull-travel.co.uk.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you.
Okay. Quickly before we move on, we've got something on notice board.
Yep. It's next weekend. Although it's part of an international break, I normally like to have it as a part of a home weekend, but it's the 11th annual Robert Eden Memorial Fund quiz night. It's at the Mayo Wynn Baxter Lounge, which is the main big one in the West Stand. Everything has been updated and swishified, and they've got new furniture and cutlery and hopefully some new staff as well while they're at it. So yes, do come along. It's 7:30 start, doors at 6:30. And the lovely thing I like about it this year is that, because we had a meeting this week, is that we've actually invested, the Robert Eden Memorial Fund has invested in a card reader. So if you want to come along and not have to pay cash and just pay and flip with your card to enter, you are free to do so. It's £5 per person to enter, teams of up to six. And if you want a little bit more information or just to tell me that you are coming, please email me, alan.wares, alan.wares at ntlworld.com. We'll give you some more information. But if you can make it, please do come along. Friday, the 8th of October in the Mayo Wynn Baxter Lounge at the Amex, 7:30 start.
Okay. And this week, it was kind of like an end of an era, really. We have seen Kasper Ankergren, who was, of course, 11 years at the club. He played 75 times for us, but no goals. No goals, Kasper. You weren't trying hard. Oh, yeah. So. He's going on to be a goalkeeping coach at his hometown of Bromby. And we wish him all success there. But I mean, Kasper, obviously a few years as a player and a lot more as a coach. And he's been part of that team that's made all of the goalkeepers under their tutelage, including Ben Roberts, Matty Ryan, David Stockdale will be very complimentary too. He's made them all better. They've helped make them all better. Obviously, Ben Roberts is the one that gets all the headlines. Kasper is part of that team, isn't he?
Brian, what did you make of Kasper when, you know, obviously you've got to talk to him quite a lot. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, he was just seemed very, I remember, was it a Southampton one game where the crowd were howling and he was just standing there with the ball on his penalty area, taking up time. He always had that very cool, calm demeanour about him. More recently, I went up to Walsall and spoke to Carl Rushworth, and Kasper was the goalkeeping coach who he mentioned as having a big sort of one-to-one impact on him, helping him and going through finer points, you know, the technical points of it. So he's obviously, there are things you maybe don't think of apart from seeing the coaches warm the keepers up at the Amex. But I think, yeah, he's gone to obviously Bromby to become, that's a good career move, I suppose, senior coach. But I think the main thing is a reminder of the family aspect of football and the professionals as well, because the main point is he's been away from his wife and kids for a year. So I think that was the number one reason. This sort of a reminder of the human element again of the profession.
Mark, you've been kind of gifted with goalkeepers over the past sort of 10, 15, well, probably for quite a long time. I mean, there's not that often we have an absolute doozy in goal. It's been a while, isn't it?
Oh, well, a certain Scottish goalkeeper of the Withdean years comes to mind. But apart
from the Withdean ghost.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Brian's correct there to observe that, that we don't really always see what really goes on every day with these players' professional lives, and that how much the pressures of that must bear on them. And but Angrigan's going to leave a nice legacy there, because if you look at all the keepers we've had, you're right, they're out. There's a lot of really strong goalkeepers. Goalkeeping has been one of the strengths of the Albion, you know, over the years. And, you know, I can't remember the time, you know, I mean, Joe Corrigan, once he was, I think he was still an England goalkeeper at the time, coming to play for us. But I'd argue say our goalkeepers of the last few years have been the best we've had ever. And we've had some great keepers. And the coaching as well. Like you mentioned, Clive Rushworth, who's going to be a star, absolute star one day.
Yeah. Walsall love him. The Walsall
he's doing really well there.
I saw him playing in a game, and he pulled off a save in that I just still can't believe he pulled off. That was still amazing. And he was being watched allegedly by Real Madrid, which I wasn't sure was true.
Barcelona. Barcelona.
Oh, yeah. Just knock it down a notch. Yeah, let's go to Barcelona. Yeah. That's the point. I mean, ever since probably Angrigan coming along. And it's not as though there was rubbish beforehand, but we haven't had, I don't recall anyone who's made me nervous since. I mean, I'm sure that someone who can say, oh, there was someone who played X games here and there. But I mean, thinking we're talking about Angrigan, then we had Kuszczak, and then we had, well, even on loan, we had Steve Harper, who was no slouch. Stockdale was kind of a little bit of a wobbler one until such time as Ben Roberts came along. And this is something I'd always say is that the lack of credit for me that Ben Roberts gets at the club, I just think is slightly maddening. Whether it's maddening for him or not, I don't know. But when Roberts came along, Stockdale was a bit of a dropsy, or rather, there wasn't actually quite the conversation that should be going on the pitch between him and Lewis Dunk, and the amount of mistakes that were being made and goals being conceded on the back of that. And then Ben Roberts came in, and obviously Casper had to be a part of that. So, you know, he as much as I would always say, you know, Ben Roberts should get a lot more credit, I'm probably also should be saying at the same time that actually Casper, especially if Carl Rushworth is saying, you know, this is a fellow who's really helped me, then, you know, we should actually be paying our respects to Casper for the sterling job he's done for us over the last 11 years.
And, of course, we wish Casper all the best, and he's welcome back here at any time. Another big success story this week, of course, was that of the Albion women's team, who made it through to the FA Cup semi-finals after beating Charlton 1-0 this week with a brilliant goal from Fliss Gibbons. Brian, this is massive for the girls.
It is, yeah. I mean, what a lineup in the semis as well. You've got the three giants of Chelsea, Man City and Arsenal, and then Brighton. And they managed to sort of rotate a little bit, not as much as I thought they would squad-wise, because they played Villa on Sunday when they were pretty poor, actually, Brighton. And then they've got Chelsea probably while this is on, if I'm not getting confused as to what time you go out. But so they made a few changes, but not as many as I thought. And it was a great strike by Fliss Gibbons, wasn't it? And a really good save at the end by Megan Walsh, who'd done very little all game. So, I was on the Zoom call with Hope Powell this morning. She was not totally impressed by how they played in that one or at all last Sunday, but obviously it was a huge landmark moment.
No, I saw the highlights of the game between Brighton and Birmingham, but also I was there for Brighton against West Ham. And, you know, West Ham were kind of feisty, but you could see there is a clear improvement, and it does seem to have come through acquisition rather than through the pathway. But there are one or two of the women's teams who are coming through, but the improvements mostly seem to be happening through acquisitions. But there is a clear improvement in the quality of the football being played. And so I think I said it before when we were talking about the 5-0 win over Birmingham, that the sixth place thing is clearly no fluke. And I think that the women do have it within them to even improve on that and probably be, let's put it this way, the best of the rest, as they would say.
Well, there's no reason why they can't challenge higher. Right?
No,
well,
yeah. I mean, last Sunday, I think they were disappointed with themselves. They lacked a sort of a spark and Villa worked them out a little bit. So there is no reason, but that was a little bit of a reality check as well.
Sure. Okay, well, we are running out of time, but what we do need to talk about, of course, is the fact that we've got fans back in the stadium, we've got fans back at gigs, we've got fans back in the theatre, Mark.
Yes, God.
So it's been a long drawn out process for you without having an audience, and the Treason Show was there was a crowdfunder, and you were doing online stuff, but to actually get back out in people's faces and actually do what you do, it must be a massive thing for you, mate.
The job, in the mirror of the football universe, you can see the way players react when there's a crowd. I mean, it's the same for performers in the show business as well. We respond to that, and we desperately miss it. And the survival of the show is dangling by a thread, because we're going to be the last of the major business sectors to pull out of this what's still ongoing pandemic. We are going to have a COVID-spaced auditorium. It's still a smaller audience. Financially, it's a risk. But the Treason Show's got wonderful support, and we've got a cracking show. We're in rehearsals now at Rope Tackle next Friday, and then at the Funky Fish on the 14th and 15th of October, on the Thursday and Friday. And you can't move for material at the moment. Everything's
on. Yeah.
So we've got a fantastic show, and I've got two new talented performers who've been desperate to get back on stage as well. And I'm loving it. And I can't wait to get back on stage to do a full Treason Show. And it's going to be a thrill. I can't wait.
And I heard to get people through the door, you've got a special incentive. You've got a petrol pump on stage. Is that right?
I wish. I probably make more. I think what's going to be good about being in the middle of Brighton is most people can get here to us by public transport. If they've got fuel. Hopefully it eases for everybody, because it's got a serious side. People in the NHS, people who are doing care work who can't get to places because of this incompetence and cronyism of this lot. But it's good times to be doing satire, shall we say.
This is the weird thing, without actually getting too much into party politics or because we do try to avoid that on the Albion Roar, but I mean, you had that, obviously you kind of lost the Trump character a little bit. I mean, if you want to dress up like Joe Biden, good luck. But certainly in this country, I mean, surely the likes of satire shows are going to struggle on account of the fact that, that we have such crazy people telling us what to do.
Well, across the board, I mean, we don't just go for one element of the political world. I mean, you're right, I won't go to the political angles in here, but we everybody gets satirised in the Treason Show, whichever political angle you look at. It is pretty, shall we say, eclectic in its choices of targets.
Sure, sure. So just quickly before we have to sign off, because we do have to sign off in a second, the show's coming up in October. Tell us about them.
So 14th and 15th of October at the Funky Fish. And if you want to book tickets, which we strongly advise you do, early, because the Friday's close to sell out. It's the Thursday. We've got a few tables left. Go to www.treasonshow.co.uk. You can see the links to the TV show, which was nominated for a UK Comedy Award as Best TV Sketch Show this year as well.
And is that going to carry on, Mark?
Yeah. The first episode of Series 4 was broadcast last night. So we're back up.
Good luck with that, mate. Good luck with that.
And that is all we've got time for this week. So thank you for listening. Thank you to Alan Wares. Thank you to Brian Owen. Thank you to Mark Brailsford. I've been Ailey Packham, and we have Let It Bounce on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online, radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course, in association with oldfootballshows.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week. Thanks. Bye. Rubber ball, like I'm bouncing back to you. Rubber ball, like I'm bouncing back to you. I'm like a rubber ball, baby, that's all that I am to you. Bouncy, 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 bouncy. Just a rubber ball, cause you think you can be true to two. Bouncy, 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 bouncy. You bounce my heart around. Stretch my love till it's thin enough to tear. I just stretch my arms to reach you anywhere. And like a rubber ball, I'll come bouncing back to you. Rubber ball, I'll come bouncing back to you. You bounce my heart around. You don't even.
Swansea. I'm like a rubber band when on my shoulder you do tap. Just a rubber band because my heartstrings, they just snap. You go and squeeze me till I'm all the flame.
She calls you by some other guy's name.
Like a rubber ball, I can bounce in back to you. Rubber ball, I can bounce in back to you. Rubber ball, I can bounce in back to you. Rubber ball, I can bounce in back to you. Rubber ball, I can bounce in back to you.